ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमामिश्वराय कृष्णप्रसाय बुरुदे श्रीमारे भक्तवरान्त स्वामी निति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रचलने निर्विशेष शून्यवादि पाश्चात्य देश ताजने श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव श्री गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे श्रीमद् भागवत कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 10 वर्स 5 आसासनो न वैवृत्य Swaminyashisha Atmanaha Na Swami Brijitta Swamyam Ichanyo Rati Chashishaha Asasana, a person who desires, na, not, vai, indeed, vritya, qualified servant, swamini, from the master, ashisha, material benefit, atmana, or personal sense gratification. Na, nor, swami, master, vritya-ta, from the servant, swamyam, prestigious position, ichan, desiring, ya, any such master, rati, bestows, cha, also, ashisha, material profit. Translation, a servant who desires material profits from his master is certainly not a qualified servant or pure devotee. Similarly, a master who bestows benedictions upon his servant because of a desire to maintain a prestigious position as master is also not a pure master. Prabhupada stated in Bhagavad Gita, kamaistastaya shrita jnana prabhajante nyadevata, those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto demigods. A demigod cannot become master, for the real master is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The demigods, to keep their prestigious positions, bestow upon their worshippers whatever benedictions the worshippers want. For example, once it was found that an asura took a benediction from Lord Shiva by which the asura would be able to kill someone simply by placing his hand on that person's head. Such benedictions are possible to receive from the demigods. If one worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, the Lord will never offer him such condemned benedictions. On the contrary, it is said in Srimad Bhagavatam, Yasya Aham Anugrinami Harasye Tadanam Shanai. If one is too materialistic, but at the same time wants to be a servant of the Supreme Lord, the Lord, because of his supreme compassion for the devotee, takes away all his material opulences and obliges him to be a pure devotee of the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj distinguishes between the pure devotee and the pure master. The Lord is the pure master, the supreme master, whereas an unalloyed devotee with no material motives is the pure servant. One who has materialistic motivations cannot become a servant, and one who unnecessarily bestows benedictions upon his servants to keep his own prestigious position is not a real master. Translation, a servant who desires material profits from his master is certainly not a qualified servant or pure devotee. Similarly, a master who bestows benedictions upon his servant because of a desire to maintain a prestigious position as master is also not a pure master. So in the previous verse, Prahlad spoke of the nature of the Supreme Lord. So he never does anything unbeneficial for the devotee. And he also spoke of the nature of a real devotee is not desiring material things. So in this verse, he shows that both the devotee and the Supreme Lord have special qualification. The devotee does not desire benefits, just as the servant should not desire some profit from the master. He simply serves. If a person serves simply because he gets money and it's a job, he's not a real servant. He's a paid servant. That's not a real servant. The person who serves is not doing it out of any love or affection. He's doing it simply to get the profit. So, similarly with the Supreme Lord, if one serves and one wants to get profit, it's not considered proper. If he serves without that desire and simply serves out of affection, then he's a true devotee. So that is the qualification of a devotee, to have no other desires except to serve the Lord. So, we can try this in the material world. A person can select another person and serve that person. And he can try to do that with great affection and no desire for material benefit. Only problem comes is the other person also is not perfect. And so the relationship does not survive. That person who is the object of service cannot respond properly to that person. So one offers affection by service to a person, the person cannot properly respond to that affection. And therefore, the servant becomes disappointed in that person. Expectations are there, they're going to somehow get some response, but they get no proper response, so therefore they get disappointed. So the proper, or they give not just an improper response, something which is very unfavorable for the person, which is unbeneficial for the person. So the proper master will never do anything unbeneficial for a person and will respond properly, but we cannot find such a person in the material world. So the actual only master is the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada gives the example of the devatas. We can try to serve them. Now, of course, generally people serve the devatas with material desires, so then even the servant is not proper. But if we try to serve the devatas without material desires, this is also what is practiced in sattva-gun. There it says, people in sattva-gun worship the devatas. But actually we see that people worship devatas with great material desires. So those people are in the mode of passion. Those who worship the devatas with no desires, this utter duty, they are considered sattva-gun. However, what is the response the devatas can give? They are limited. Their power is to give material things only. They can't give anything beyond that. That's all they can do, is give material things to a person, even if the person doesn't want them, and then it's unfavorable for that person's spiritual advancement. So the only person who can give a proper response to a person who serves selflessly is the Supreme Lord. So what does the Supreme Lord give to the person? How does he respond to the devotee? The Supreme Lord gives himself. He becomes a servant of the servant. He becomes a servant of the devotee. So this is extraordinary. The Supreme Lord falls under the control of the devotee. And what happens to the devotee? He gets extraordinary bliss. So the Supreme Lord, because he has all powers and he has all knowledge and he has all mercy and all shaktis, etc., he can respond perfectly to each jiva who surrenders to him. And he can satisfy each jiva perfectly. Not only can respond perfectly, the devotee, of course, doesn't want anything, but the Lord gives that devotee whatever is favorable for his service and his development, nourishment of affection. So in this way, the devotee becomes completely satisfied. So that only the relationship between the jiva and the Supreme Lord produces complete satisfaction for the jiva. The Supreme Lord knows what is best for the living entity. He knows what is beneficial for the living entity. And ultimately, what is most beneficial for the living entity is that the Lord bestows upon him the highest bliss. So the Supreme Lord is the object of service for the jiva. He is the one who can bring about the highest bliss for the jiva. No one else can do that. So he is the perfect master. He's always in that position. Eternally, he is the master and he is eternally perfect. So there is no possibility of choosing someone else at some other time. It is always the Supreme Lord who is the object of our service. The jivas, however, are many. Some are nitya-siddha. So they choose to serve the Supreme Lord and they never deviate from that. That is their eternal position. So they are perfect servants. Their qualification is they think only of service to the Supreme Lord and how they can please him. And there's no contamination of that at any time. Other jivas are in the material world. And unlike the jivas in the spiritual world, they do not think of the Supreme Lord and how to serve him. Instead, they think how I can enjoy for myself. Supreme Lord is, of course, master of everyone by his very position. And he's also very merciful to these jivas, even though they are offenders, they are aparadis, because they reject the Lord. So the Lord is very merciful to these jivas, and he supplies different means by which they can change their mentality, change their attitude. So he does that through his own appearance, his avatar, through scriptures, through bhakti and the holy name, and through devotees of the Lord. These are the influences which will change the person. So the jiva's nature is simply to try to get some enjoyment. That nature has to be changed. So it is very difficult to do that. However, the Lord has this very powerful process. That is the process of bhakti. So this is the process that can actually influence the jiva and change the jiva's nature. The choice of enjoying in the material world or the choice of serving the Supreme Lord. So it is bhakti which will influence that jiva and make him change his mind. And that bhakti is delivered through devotees of the Lord. And therefore the devotees of the Lord are praised in the scriptures and Bhagavatam, because they are the instruments of delivering bhakti to the jivas in the material world. So the influence has different levels. The first level is accidental level, accidental bhakti. So though the jiva has no favorability to the Lord by accidental contact with bhakti, the jiva gets influenced a little bit. Not much, but a little bit. If that continues for many, many, many births, and it gets more and more influence, accidental influence, then eventually the jiva begins to change a little more and a little more. Which means he gives up his, gradually gives up his addiction to material enjoyment. And then he begins to think, this is not so nice after all. Maybe there's something else also. And he also begins to have this feeling, there is something else there. Maybe there's some other person around, some other existence. So then he becomes a little favorable towards the existence of the Supreme Lord. And when that becomes a little stronger, that is called Shraddha. And when he gets Shraddha, then he's qualified to seek out proper information. So that is when the devotees become very merciful to him and give him knowledge of scripture. And then he practices bhakti. So when he practices bhakti, then very quickly the nature can begin to become more and more and more favorable to the Lord. So we go through these stages from Shraddha to Nishtaruchi Asakti Bhava Prema. That is growth of favorableness towards the Lord. And consequently, decrease of material attachment and material enjoyment. And when it reaches perfection, it is called prema, and there's no contamination of anything material. That becomes fixed in the jiva, and then he's qualified to stay in the spiritual world eternally. So, even though the jivas in the material world are unfavorable to the Lord and reject the Lord, the Lord has this process of gradually influencing them and changing their attitude through the process of bhakti. A more gradual process is the process of doing karma yoga and gyan yoga and astanga yoga, by which they eventually realize, I'm not the body, I'm an atma, when they get to sattva guna and jnana. But to get to sattva guna and jnana, they have to elevate themselves to tamoguna and rajaguna. That is why they have varnashram system, to elevate the jivas. Then, when they understand their atma, easy to progress towards bhakti at that stage. So that's the gradual process. Unfortunately, Krishna rejects that process in Kali Yuga. It's not practical, and therefore at the end of Bhagavad Gita, he says, Sarvadharman Pariteja Mamekam Sharanam Raja. Just practice bhakti. So bhakti can exist without the gradual process. But it does depend upon spreading that bhakti to all people somehow or other, exposing them to the bhakti constantly, by which they gradually get their agata sukritis enough that they get faith. So therefore it requires constant exposure to the name and other processes of devotional service. So people get that exposure, then eventually they become favorable and they can practice bhakti. So that is the simplified method for Kali Yuga. Just do bhakti yoga. In this way, the jiva becomes qualified, a qualified servant. And as I said, the Lord is always qualified. So simply, the jiva has to work on his own qualification, becoming favorable to the Lord. So that favorableness is, to be more precise, pure bhakti. Anya abhilashita shunya. The devotee, even if he's not perfect, should practice this pure bhakti. He may not be pure, but like the servant also, who may not be, is not pure, but he wants to serve the Lord without expectations of getting some money from him, that is superior. So in bhakti also, uttama bhakti or pure bhakti means that even though we're not actually pure, we serve and we're not asking the Lord for things when we execute our actions of bhakti. We are simply trying to please the Lord. So that is what is meant by this example here of the servant and the master not accepting profits. This is an example of the process of uttama bhakti. Well, if the person so desires, then they can get to that level. So we do have devotees like Brahma. He's also head of a sampradaya. He's also a devotee of the Lord. He gives knowledge. So he gives knowledge to Narada Muni, and then that goes to Vedavyasa, etc. Normally, the people in Sattvagun don't have that desire directly. They have two desires. One is peace, the other is Atmagyana. So, and they do everything out of nishkama, no desire for material things. So they'll follow the rules of scripture without attachment to the results. So therefore they worship the devatas, not to get things, just because it is scriptural and they should follow scripture, and they're trying to be nishkama in their all their activities. If they get the association of devotees, then they can begin to change, and then their desires will change in Sattva-guna, and then they will desire to worship the Supreme Lord. Now, of course, the devatas themselves in Sattva-guna, to some degree, because they are devotees of the Lord, they can also be favorable to the process of bhakti in Sattva-guna, and therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Sattva Guna is considered by Krishna to be the best of the gunas, because it's actually the door to spiritual development, first at the level of Atmagyan, and then it can also be, that's favorable for bhakti, recognizing Atma, and then recognizing Supreme Lord. So to some degree the devatas can be favorable to that, though normally we find people are expecting other things from them, so they're just asking for material things. So in Sattva-guna, generally, they stop asking for material things and simply respect them and offer the worship out of duty. Well, as I said, generally they are not the ones who are giving bhakti. It is the devotees who are giving the bhakti in the material world. Now, of course, the devatas are devotees, but they also have a role to play. And if that role is, that is, they are dispensers of what material benefits and preserving the balance of the food, air, etc., elements for the human beings. If that is interrupted, then it's natural they should apply to the Supreme Lord to rectify the position, otherwise they can't do their service. So we can't say that their requests to the Supreme Lord to maintain their position is exactly selfish, because they're actually doing their duty by doing that. Just as in devotional service, if you lose your facilities, then you can pray to the Lord, give him the facilities back so I can serve you. Or if a devotee gets sick, then he prays to the Lord, please may I get better so I can recover and I can do my service. So that's similar with the devatas. It's not that they're completely disattached to their positions in the material world. They understand they are devotees of the Lord and they have their service to do, just as the Manus and the Rishis and others have their services to do. Well, all devotees do have, to some degree, bhakti. Otherwise, they're not devotees. And devotee means he's practicing bhakti. He has faith and he's practicing bhakti. just as we have the name, we have namabhas, and we have pure name, etc. So there's, we can say, degrees in which the potency of bhakti will also manifest according to the advancement of the devotee. But nevertheless, there's some bhakti there in any case. So even without any bhakti, the name manifests power, as in the case of Ajamila. So with some bhakti of the devotee, even if he's not a high devotee, it's better than namabhas of the Ajamila. If he's a namabhas devotee, he can give influence another devotee at namabhas stage. If he's practicing pure bhakti and pure name, then he can influence him in that way with pure name, which is higher still. So he can strive for pure bhakti because of the pure practice of the devotee, even though he's doing sadhana. And of course, if he's more elevated, then he can give more also.